and build an absurd amount of wealth in the coming years. Hang in there with me a little longer while I explain. The graph in figure one at biggerpockets.com/rentalbookfigures shows what your total net worth would be over 30 years using both of the scenarios I just outlined and with no additional money being deposited into the account. The curved line represents the compound interest scenario, in which the money is continually reinvested. The straight line represents the simple interest scenario, in which the profit is withdrawn and spent each year rather than reinvested. Sure, at the beginning, the two lines are almost indistinguishable. However, after a while, the compound interest line begins to take on a life of its own. This mathematical phenomenon is known as exponential growth, and it is exactly how wealth is built. Now, let's bring back the focus to real estate and your job. When you own a rental property and use all the profit from that investment to live on, you severely hurt your ability to build wealth through compound interest. Although you may still build wealth through the loan paydown, tax savings, and appreciation, you can do better. By reinvesting your cash flow into your business, you'll be able to earn additional interest on the previous interest, just as my example with a $1,000 bank account shows. Taking the cash flow and enjoying your profit may be tempting, but don't do so first without considering the long-term ramifications. Perhaps you don't want to build massive additional wealth, and if that's the case, by all means, live on your cash flow. However, if you are looking to grow your net worth exponentially, consider keeping your job or finding another way to make income. When you invest for the future, largely with buy and hold investing, you are reinvesting your profits back into your business and thinking for the long term. You cannot simply rely on the money you earn from your investments to sustain you and pay your bills. You must have another source of income. This is why many rental property investors also flip houses or get into wholesaling. These options help them pay the bills and save up additional cash to support their rental property business. Number four, how to quit your job through rental properties. Okay, so I just spent several pages trying to convince you not to quit your job yet, or at least not to live off your cash flow yet. However, I know some of you are further along the path and maybe don't want to build a massive rental portfolio. So let me explore the idea of quitting your job through rental properties. If you want to quit your job using rental property cash flow, common sense would dictate that you need a significant amount of cash flow coming in. There are two ways you can accomplish this: the cash flow per door method and the return on investment method. Let me explain both. Cash flow per door. One easy way to think about financial freedom from your job through rental properties is by looking at cash flow per door. In other words, after all the bills are paid each month, how much money is left over per unit or per door? Let's say that you want to see a minimum of $100 per month per unit in cash flow after all the expenses are paid. So how many units would you need to have to quit your job? Well, if you needed $2,000 per month to survive, you would need 20 units. Be careful though. Real estate always has ups and downs with unforeseen expenses that could occur at any time. So make sure that you are following this strategy. You have significant cash reserves. Additionally, do you want to earn just enough to survive? How much income do you need to thrive? A good friend of mine advises investors that your business should bring in at least three times what your current job is before you think about quitting your job. 1x for tax, 1x for survival, and 1x to reinvest and for unexpected things. I think his advice isn't too far off. The second way to think about quitting your job is through just a return on investment. The more math-minded investors out there can get a lot more technical by looking at return on investment and the amount of cash invested. For example, let's say that you only buy rental properties that produce a 10% return on investment for your money. We'll also assume you want to retire with $100,000 per year in passive cash flow from your rental properties. You would then use these two figures to determine how much cash you'd need to invest. To do this, use the following simple formula. The annual cash flow divided by the interest rate equals the cash invested. If the annual cash flow was $100,000, the interest rate was 10%, then the cash invested, you would need $1 million to invest. Therefore, at a 10% return on investment, you would need $1 million of your cash invested to achieve $100,000 in cash flow from your properties. When I had less capital to invest, I generally used the cash flow per door method simply because I was investing with creativity. After all, when I used $0 to buy a property, my return on investment was infinite. So the return on investment calculation didn't make much sense. As I grow my wealth and get into more and more boring traditional real estate investments, I'll likely shift my process to use the return on investment calculation to determine how much I need to retire. Depending on how much money you plan to use when getting started, you may want to use either option or even both. What next? If your goal is to quit your job, this book will help. If your goal is to pad your retirement, this book will help. If your goal is to build incredible wealth, this book will help. Whatever goal you have for your life, I believe rental properties can help you achieve it and to attain the life you want to live. Over a decade ago, I sat in that dark all-you-can-eat Chinese buffet restaurant and read those 9 words that changed my life. There is no such thing as an ordinary life. I truly believe this. Life itself is so extraordinary and unique that the only thing keeping people ordinary is themselves. This book is designed to help you break away from ordinary and achieve more. I want you to realize that an extraordinary life is not only possible, but it is there for the taking. An ordinary life doesn't really exist, so it's time for you to take hold of your destiny and hang on for dear life. It's going to be a wild ride. Chapter 2, The 5 Keys to Rental Property Success. Jim Rohn once said, "Success is not to be pursued. It is to be attracted by the person we become." Thomas Edison's teacher said he was too stupid to learn anything. Beethoven handed the violin awkwardly, and his instructor once called him hopeless as a composer. Babe Ruth led the American League in strikeouts for 5 different seasons and was known as the strikeout king. Despite their past, these 3 would go down in history books as incredibly successful individuals. They didn't let their past determine their future. They rose up and conquered their industry, leaving a mark that no one could ever erase. You may not be the next Edison, Beethoven, or Babe Ruth, but you do have the ability to achieve incredible greatness yourself. Success is an action, and I believe you have what it takes to achieve it. This chapter is all about finding that success, despite what your past might be. You are about to learn the 5 keys to rental property success. And although acquiring rental properties involves many other steps as well, these 5 keys are essential and non-negotiable if you want to find long-lasting success. Master these 5, and you too will go down in history as a person of incredible success. Number 1, think the right thoughts. The first and perhaps most important step in becoming a successful rental property investor is thinking the right thoughts. In other words, it's not an external action you need to take, but an internal mindset you need to create. This mindset begins by flipping a switch in your head so that you say to yourself, "I am doing this," rather than "I want to do this." You tell yourself, "I will do this," rather than "I can do this." Your mind says, "I won't give up," rather than "I hope I won't give up." Let me illustrate this further using a common desire for most of the world, six-pack abs. You see, I want to have six-pack abs. I can get six-pack abs. And when I start to work towards those six-pack abs, I hope I won't give up on that journey. But you know what? I'm not going to get those six-pack abs with that mindset. To take it a step farther, I even know how to get six-pack abs. I know the exercises I need to do, the food I need to eat, and the lifestyle I need to follow. But I'm still not going to get that six-pack. Why? Because I'm not yet committed. I haven't yet flipped that switch in my head so that I tell myself, "I am getting six-pack abs. I will do this and I won't give up." Deep inside my soul, I know I have not flipped that switch, committed myself, and started taking action. And as much as I don't want to admit it, I know that I've not yet committed to getting that six-pack. It's just a dream, a desire. Does this sound familiar to you? Have you flipped the switch of success in your mind? Have you made the commitment to yourself that you will become a rental property investor, come hell or high water? If not, don't worry. I believe that by the end of this book, you will. But first, here are a few tips for moving in that direction. A, write down your goals and read them out loud every day. I got this tip from Grant Cardone, an investor with over $350 million in real estate assets, who we interviewed on the Bigger Pockets podcast, show number 108. He's been reading his goals out loud to himself every morning and night for 30 years. And he also reads them when he's feeling down. In addition, his book, The 10X Rule, The Only Difference Between Success and Failure, Cardone encourages his readers to take whatever goal they might have, multiply it by 10, change their plans or mindset to reflect that new goal, and then take massive action to accomplish their revised objective. For example, one of my goals was to achieve 100 rental units, and my mind worked towards that goal. I could buy a fourplex here, a single family house there, a small apartment building there, and it was all very attainable. After applying the 10X rule to my goals, though, I'm now aiming for 1,000 units. My mind is very different. I no longer think in terms of a single family house here and there. That will never get me to 1,000 units. I have to think bigger. As Napoleon Hill states in Think and Grow Rich, whatever the mind can conceive and believe, it can achieve. Your mind will naturally work to solve the problems or goals you've set before it. So raise your goal, think differently, and 10x your life. B, realize that you are who you associate with. As entrepreneur Jim Rohn said, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. Think about the five people with whom you occupy your day. You are very likely similar to them. Why is this? One big word. Homeostasis. Homeostasis is a scientific term that essentially means that things like to stay constant and level. The human body is a homeostatic biological machine that wants to stay at 98.6 degrees. Your home thermostat is a homeostatic device that wants to keep the house temperature at a comfortable 72 degrees. Your car cruise control is a homeostatic feature that keeps your freeway commute moving at a steady 74 miles per hour while you drive to work. Your social life is a homeostatic entity that desires to keep everyone on the same level, usually subconsciously. As you start to grow your wealth or your level of success, your friends will naturally feel the pull of homeostasis and, with no maliciousness intended, attempted to pull you back to their level. They won't understand your newfound passion. However, if you instead hang around with five people far more successful than you, their homeostatic tendencies will kick in and they'll naturally want to help you rise to their level of success. Now, please understand that I'm not encouraging you to abandon all your friends. Money is by far not the most important thing in life, and homeostatic phenomenon also applies to character, intelligence, passion, and other non-monetary traits. I chose to spend time with people who make me a better person in all aspects of my life. I'm also not suggesting that you befriend successful people just to take advantage of their position and raise yourself up in the world. I'm simply encouraging you to be mindful of the people with whom you spend the most time and of how they influence your worldview. Try to spend some time each and every day with other real estate investors. Their homeostatic tendencies will naturally lead them to want to help you achieve their level of success. When I first got into rental properties, I helped my best friend paint a house for his landlord. While painting, the landlord, Kyle, stopped by to check up on the work, and he and I got to talking. That conversation led to coffee later, which progressed to thousands of phone calls and one of the best friendships I have today. For the past 8 years or so, Kyle and I have chatted about business at least once a week, sharing our stories, our problems, our tenant drama, our financing tips, and more. Kyle naturally wanted to bring me up to his level of success, and I graciously accepted. Who do you know in your life with whom you could build a relationship? If you said no one and immediately shut off your brain, shame on you. There are tens of millions of real estate investors out there, and likely dozens right in your area. So get off your couch and go build some relationships. Local real estate clubs and landlord meetups are great places to find these individuals, as is a referral from your real estate agent or simply word of mouth. C, change your I can't to how can I? In my previous book, The Book on Investing in Real Estate with No and Low Money Down, I spoke at length about the concept of changing your mindset from one of I can't to how can I? This change of vocabulary is simple yet profound. As Robert Kiyosaki explains in his book, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, responding to new ideas with I can't shuts your brain off and stops it from working for you. By changing your mindset from an immediate declaration of no to an immediate question of how, you put your brain into overdrive to help you accomplish your goals. I can't afford that property becomes how can I afford that property? I can't find a good deal becomes how can I find a good deal? I can't connect with the right partner becomes how can I connect with the right partner? In all these situations, suddenly you have a puzzle to solve, a journey to start. You'll begin to see solutions where before you only saw a blank wall. Your brain will learn to think creatively, and over time, you'll find that nothing is impossible. Mom was right when she told you, you can do anything you want if you just put your mind to it. So change the way your mind thinks and you'll change the way your mind operates. Number two, study the right source. Once you've flipped the switch in your head and are fully committed to a future that involves building wealth through real estate, it's time to take action. Before you make your first purchase, however, you need to gain some education. Therefore, the second key to success in rental property investing is to study the right source. But what is the right source, and how do you study it? What should you learn? It's easy to get overwhelmed when you decide to take the plunge into real estate investing. There are literally hundreds of different paths you could take to achieve wealth through real estate. And sadly, many people never decide on and commit to one path and thus never get started. You've no doubt heard the term analysis paralysis, which refers to people who spend so much time learning and analyzing, they never get around to actually doing anything. The secret to overcoming analysis paralysis, I believe, is in focus. When you are first getting started in the world of real estate, learning a little bit about a lot of things is important. However, as you progress, you will want to start focusing on a specific real estate strategy and avoid getting caught up in discussions on other strategies. Yes, flipping houses may sound like fun, and wholesaling real estate may sound like a quick way to make a buck, but if you've committed to becoming a rental property investor, don't spend too much time thinking about the other paths. Every rule has an exception, of course, but don't get caught up chasing the next shiny object. Instead, when you hear about a different path someone took to achieve success, try to glean the mindset they took and apply it to the path you have chosen. That you're reading this book on rental property investing is a good indication that this is the path you want to go down, which is great. But I believe you can refine your focus even more by narrowing down exactly what kind of rental properties you want to buy. High-end, low-end, multifamily, single-family. I'll talk more about this later when the time comes to lay out your plan, but keep one word in mind as you move forward. Focus. Studying the right information. So what is the right source for you to study? Where do you find the best real estate knowledge? Let's explore several of the most common learning methods you can use to obtain knowledge about the particular real estate niche you want to focus on. I'll start with one that I already know you're good at. Books. Congratulations, you're already onto this one. When I first got started investing in real estate, I fell in love with real estate books. The summer after I decided that real estate was going to be my future, I read more than 100 real estate books, averaging almost one per day. I didn't pay for most of them because I simply went to my local library each week and reserved a handful of titles I wanted to read. Books have a way of changing the way you think because you are spending so much time inside an author's head. By reading this book, you are getting a glimpse inside my head and learning how I think about real estate. It took me a decade to learn how to get where I am today, and you will learn everything I know about rental properties in the next few hours. Does that excite you as much as it does me? I want to give you a list of my favorite real estate books so you can head to your local library and hop on Amazon and pick up a few for yourselves. But rather than taking up space in this book to do so, I'll simply invite you over to biggerpockets.com/bestbooks to find my list of the 21 favorite real estate books written by such authors as Gary Keller, Spencer Strauss, Jay Scott, Larry Loftus, Frank Gallinelli, and Ken McElroy, and more. The last thing I want to say about books before we move on is this. Don't just read. When you're first getting started, read as much as you can, but after a while, you will need to stop reading and start doing. You might brag to your friends that you read 20 books this month, but if you didn't learn anything or take any action on the information in those books, what was the purpose? You would be better off reading just 5 books a year and taking action on what you learned. So with this book, set a goal for yourself of reading every word, maybe even twice, and then putting the lessons into action. Podcasts. Perhaps the newest educational medium on this list, podcasts are audio shows you can listen to online or on your smartphone. When I decided to take a more active role at Bigger Pockets, the first things I insisted to Josh, our CEO, is that we start a podcast, largely because I was addicted to listening to other podcasts, and I knew the power they had to help and inform people. We launched the Bigger Pockets podcast on January 2013, and within days, we hit the top 10 list of all business podcasts on iTunes, and we've remained the number one real estate podcast in the world ever since. As a publication of this book, we have 1,415 five-star ratings and have had more than 8 million downloads. But more importantly, we've recorded more than 140 shows, interviewed 120-plus guests, talked for over 200 hours, and covered everything from losing millions of dollars to investing while working a full-time job, as well as about wholesaling, lease options, rental properties, landlording, flipping, mobile homes, commercial investing, and many other topics. We've asked every single guest about the real estate and business books that's changed their lives. We've discovered the secret to the success and what they believe successful investors apart from those who give up or fail. We've asked them about their mistakes, their failures, their victories and routines, and we've done all of this to help you become a better investor. Podcasts are free, and you can listen to them while you drive, while you work, while you fold laundry. You can listen with your spouse, with your kids, or alone. You can even listen at double speed to fit more shows into your busy schedule. Earlier in this book, I talked about the power of the people with whom you spend the time with and the influence they can have on your success. So why not spend a few hours each week taking in a real estate podcast and learning from other investors? Podcasts have an incredible way of making you feel like you know the host or the guest, as though you were actually sitting down with them for coffee. Every BiggerPockets meetup or event I attend, I hear the sentiment from dozens of people that I've never met before. They tell me, I feel like I know you. And the funny thing is, because they've listened to so many episodes of our show, I feel like I know them too. Now keep in mind, if one show per week is not enough for you, there are dozens of real estate podcasts available, some better than others. I'd recommend the BiggerPockets podcast, of course, but my other favorites are the Real Estate Radio Guy Show and Just Start Real Estate with Mike Simmons. But if you look around, you may find others you enjoy also. If you find a good show you enjoy, help the podcaster out by leaving them a rating or review on iTunes. Producing a podcast is the most time-intensive activity we do each week, so I know how much work goes into them. So give your favorite podcaster a boost by improving their rankings in iTunes with a positive review. Blogs. If you had said the word blog 10 years ago, very few people would know what you were talking about. However, today, blogs are everywhere. For those still unaware, a blog is simply a collection of articles called posts published online for free. Anyone can start a blog, share their knowledge, which makes blog posts one of the best ways to gain real estate education without having to pay a penny. The internet has hundreds, if not thousands, of real estate investing blogs written by real-life, practicing real estate investors and covering practically every real estate niche and strategy. Forums. Books are an amazing source of information, and blog posts can offer terrific insight, but both of these sources are one-directional. In other words, you only receive information. Engaging in a conversation with either one is difficult, if not impossible. So for this aspect of your education, I recommend getting involved in an online real estate investing forum. Forums are essentially online conversations around a particular topic. One person starts a thread or conversation, and anyone in the community can respond with a post to offer advice or knowledge, or in any other way further engage in the discussion. Forums are great because when you are investing in rental properties, situations will arise that no book or blog post has ever addressed. For those what-if questions, being able to ask for input from others in the same position via a popular real estate investing forum like BiggerPockets is really nice, and most forums are free to use. Not only are forums great for asking questions, they are also a fantastic way to network. When you jump into a forum to engage in conversations, no matter what experience level you have, people see you and connect just like in the real world. You can quickly establish yourself as someone who is serious about their business to find potential lenders, partners, deals, and other valuable resources and opportunities right there in those forums. I often hear stories about individuals in the BiggerPockets forums who are finding incredible success because of their participation there. So I strongly encourage you to do the same. Take 10 minutes every day and interact with others and build your reputation on a real estate investing forum of your choice. YouTube. Want to hear a secret? YouTube has more than just cute cat videos. Shocking, I know. But with 432,000 hours of content being uploaded to the site every day, YouTube is actually filled with a lot of great educational content that can help you grow as a rental property investor. Keep in mind that I'm not just referring to videos on real estate investing. You can also find videos on business management, motivation, home repairs, and pretty much anything else you need to help you become a more successful real estate entrepreneur. Just don't get too sidetracked by all the cat videos, because there are a lot of them. Now, what about coaching programs? No doubt you've seen expensive coaching and training programs advertised on late-night television or internet banner ads. Real estate gurus claim to be able to teach you to become filthy rich through real estate investing. Is this real? Can you really learn from these guys? Well, let me first explain how this industry works. Typically, this kind of coaching or training involves several layers, and as you peel away the layers, the education gets more and more expensive. Let me share the most common layers so you'll be able to recognize them in the future. Number one, the free class. You might come across an advertisement on the radio, on television, in your local newspaper, or on your favorite website, something like free real estate seminar at the local hotel or conference center. The marketing teams behind these gurus spend a lot of money to drive traffic to these free seminars, hoping they pack the room with wannabe real estate investors. And second, the hype. In the seminar, the real estate guru creates massive hype around what real estate can do, showing photos of his properties, citing impressive numbers on how much profit he made, and claiming how easy it was. He tells stories of past students who have amassed a fortune from his investing tips. He pushes on all the right pain points about how hard being broke is, how you're not taking care of your family well enough, how you're missing out on life's luxuries. Then he pitches hard for you to attend his weekend boot camp, usually for a small yet not insignificant chunk of money, between $2 and $500. After the pitch, he encourages the attendees to run to the back of the room to sign up, and many people do. Then third, the boot camp. At this boot camp, the guru goes into even more detail about what real estate can do, shares more numbers related to what he's done, and will probably spend a decent amount of time showing you a high-level overview of the kind of investing he is touting as the best way to invest in real estate. He may even talk about numerous different strategies people use to build wealth in real estate. Some gurus are even known to spend a significant amount of time teaching those present how to negotiate and, as a test, encourage attendees to call up their credit card companies and get their credit card limits raised significantly. However, the guru's only real goal is to get you to sign up for the next level of training, which is typically $20,000 to $50,000 in-depth coaching with some live events built in. I have no doubt that many, though not all, of these real estate gurus have good information to share. However, the problem lies not so much in what as in the how. These people are expert marketers and manipulators and know how to touch on the right pain points and cause your emotions to lead you to make an expensive purchase. Their pitch logically makes a lot of sense. With just a $25,000 investment in your future, you'll end up making much more than that from real estate training you'll learn. What is $25,000 or $50,000 or even $100,000 when you'll be making millions of dollars from your real estate? The problem, in my opinion, is twofold. First, I believe that the vast majority of those who attend these events will never actually use the information presented. And second, the information people learn from those programs could easily be learned elsewhere, absolutely free, like on BP. Does coaching work? Sure, for some people. But I believe anyone who can succeed because they took a super expensive training program could have also succeeded without that program as well. After all, the program is not what makes you successful. You make yourself successful. Real estate programs offer education, motivation, and accountability, which can all be obtained for much lower costs than what the salesman charges. Rather than helping most people get ahead, these programs simply plunge many Americans into further debt and despair when they end up spending their life savings on coaching for an activity at which they will not succeed. That said, do programs like this have a place? Yes, I believe so. Successful coaching has been demonstrated in almost every industry there is, as far as getting people motivated and moving towards their goals. However, the people who get the largest benefit from coaching are those who have already found a significant level of success in whatever they are doing. They have proven themselves to be someone who takes action, is a self-starter, and is willing to work hard. And most importantly, they have money to spend, and it's not coming from a credit card. To summarize, expensive coaching and training programs may have a place, but they are probably not appropriate for new investors. Real estate gurus have a terrible reputation for taking gullible and low-income people and pitching them hard-to-pay-for, overpriced training that they are not ready for and that will only put them in a worse situation. In the end, these gurus provide no more than an organized version of what interested individuals can already get on their own: education, accountability, and motivation. If you want to save your money and still get all three of these benefits, get active on BiggerPockets and use your cash for your next big investment instead. At this point, I've addressed both the need to think the right thoughts and the best way to study the right subjects. Now, let's move on to the third key to success in rental property investing: picking the right plan. Picking the right plan. Would you tell me, please, which way I ought to go from here? Well, that depends a good deal on where you want to get to, said the cat. I don't much care where, said Alice. Then it doesn't matter which way you go. Lewis Carroll, Alice's Adventures in Wonderland. Do you know where you want to go? No, not physically, but do you know where you want your real estate properties to take you? Do you know when you want to retire? Do you know how you're going to retire? Do you know what kind of rental properties you want to buy? Where you want to buy them? How you plan to put it all together? These questions can all be answered by having a solid plan. Therefore, the third key to success in rental property investing is to create the right plan. Chapter 3 of this book will actually walk you through several distinct plans that others have created. But first, I want to talk about the very basic theory behind having a plan. Your plan is not your business plan. What? Yes, I'm not actually talking about a formal document that you write objective at the top and give to your banker. Although an official business plan might come in handy for you someday, I'm talking about writing down your strategy for achieving financial freedom through rental properties. Yes, it should be written down, but no, you don't need to make it anything fancy. Your banker is not going to see this. I'm not going to see this. Your ninth grade English teacher will not see this. Most likely, the only people who will ever lay eyes on this document will be you and your spouse, significant other, business partner, or accountability partner. Sure, you can draft a business plan if you want, but what I'm referring to here is a written declaration of your deep-seated beliefs as to where you are headed. I first wrote down my plan at 3 a.m. by hand on a 8.5 by 14 piece of paper. 9 years later, I still have that document and I refer to it often. And although I haven't followed it exactly, because plans do change, I have adhered to it as closely as possible. So again, the kind of plan I'm referring to outlines your vision for where you want to go and how you plan to get there. What is the end goal? Where are you headed? What kind of strategy do you want to use? What won't you do? For example, I won't purchase condos, or I'm not going to do commercial real estate. What kind of properties do you want to buy? How often will you buy properties? How are you going to finance it all? These questions are all part of your plan, which you will put together soon. You may not know all the answers to these questions yet, and that is perfectly fine. The goal of a plan is to get you thinking, learning, and strategizing. Your plan can change. That's right. Your plan is not written in stone. It is fluid and may change over time. The purpose of a plan is not to outline every detail of your investing life, but rather to give you a roadmap for where you are hoping to travel. Your plan may begin with the idea of buying small, multifamily properties, but may shift later to buying single-family homes or apartment complexes or notes or any of 100 other strategies. Again, that is okay. Like Alice in Wonderland, if you don't care where or how you end up, having a plan doesn't matter. But you are not like Alice. You have goals and you have a future to prepare for. You likely don't want to work the next 50 years and retire on Social Security waiting for that small check to come in the mail each month before you can go buy bread. You want financial freedom. That is your goal, right? Am I wrong? If not, let's get started building your plan. How do I start my plan? Begin your plan with the end in mind. This may seem pretty obvious, but so many people start planning their investment strategy by picking out a particular house without even knowing whether that particular house is part of their plan or should be included in their plan. Just as a road trip begins with a destination in mind, so should your investment plan. This takes us back to the idea of goal setting that I talked about earlier in the chapter. Where do you want to go? What are your long-term goals? Where do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years? There are numerous destinations people are trying to reach with their real estate investing, and each of these individuals is working a plan to get there. So take a moment and think about where you want to end up financially. Get specific. When do you want to get there? Get specific. Now, write your goals and destinations down now. Congratulations. You've just taken the first step in building your investment plan. Feels pretty good, doesn't it? Now, goals are incredibly important, but a goal without a plan is just a dream. We need to go further and help you get there. But first, let's talk about your why. What is your why? I want to challenge you to think even bigger than your goals. Goals are great, but they fall short because they are easy to change in difficult times. For example, you might set a goal to lose 20 pounds by Christmas, but a few weeks into your diet, you'll lose motivation and ended up eating an entire chocolate cake. Trust me, I've been there. Why? Because you were focused on the goal, not the why. Why do you want to achieve the goal you just wrote down? What is the purpose of doing so? Building wealth is great, but let me make one thing very clear. You'll never see a hearse followed by a U-Haul because you can't take it with you when you die. Material things are temporary, but experiences and the impact we have on others lasts forever. Acquiring assets just to acquire more assets is pretty much pointless. There has to be a greater reason why you want to achieve this. Take a moment and ponder your why. What is your reason for wanting to build wealth, increase cash flow, or whatever other goals you might have? Is it to spend more time with your kids or your grandkids so you can travel the world and collect life experiences? To help break the cycle of poverty in your family's lineage so you can leave a terrible job? To ensure there is always food on the table for your family even if you were to pass away? Or so you can wake up every morning and do what you want, not what someone else wants you to do? Knowing your why will help you reach your goals. When attaining your goals becomes difficult, it's easy to say, well, I guess I don't need to build wealth. After all, rich people kind of suck. But when your goal is, I want to attend every single sporting event and school play my kids are ever in, and I need the freedom to do that. Suddenly, those challenges become much easier to fight through. So take a moment and write down why you want to build wealth through real estate. Great. Now let's talk about the kind of vehicle you'll use to get there. What kind of investment property should you buy? Do you plan to buy single-family homes, small multifamily properties, apartment complexes, maybe all three, maybe something else? In Chapter 7, I'll actually cover a lot of different kinds of rental properties that you can buy, so you should probably finish this book before finishing your plan. But if you already have a clear idea of what you want to buy, you can write that down now. How often will you buy? Do you plan on buying one property in your first year? Two? 10? What about in your second year or your third? The goal of your plan is to help you envision what your future could look like based on certain things being true. So feel free to experiment here. What if you bought one house in year one, two in year two, three in year three, and so on? What if you bought one apartment complex every 5 years? What would that look like? Again, this may change as you work your way through this book, but start by jotting down your thoughts on your buying frequency now. How will you finance your deals? Finally, knowing how you will finance your deals is a good idea. Do you make extra income from your job that you can dedicate a part of it to buying deals? Or will you have to be more creative in your financing of those properties? This can be the most difficult part of the plan for many people, especially if they have not yet learned what those financing techniques are. And don't worry, by the end of this book, you'll be a master. If you already know how you will finance your properties, write that down now. What should your plan look like? As I mentioned earlier, I wrote my first investment plan on an 8.5 by 14 piece of computer paper because I happened to have it lying around. You can write yours on a piece of paper, type it up on a word processor, or draw it on your bedroom wall. The point is to write it down. I like using paper and pencil because it allows me to erase and move things around as I go. To start, write the word today at the top in big letters. Then at the bottom, write out your goal in big letters. The space in between is where you will write out your plan. Fill in that space with the vision you have. In Chapter 3, I'm going to share 4 different plans with you that you can use as your guide for your own editing, tweaking, and discarding as you like. But first, let's talk about the final 2 keys in rental property success. Number 4, acquire the right asset. Step 4 in achieving success through rental properties is acquiring the right asset and avoiding liabilities. Simply put, liabilities are things that detract from your wealth, while assets help you grow your wealth. Liabilities include things that take money from your pocket every month, like a car payment, rent, utility bills, and cell phone bills. Assets are things that help you grow wealth, such as real estate, stocks, and businesses. Therefore, as the author of Rich Dad Poor Dad, Robert Kiyosaki, would argue, and as would I, that if you want to build wealth, you need to start collecting more assets and decreasing your liabilities. Of course, given that this is a book about rental property investing, I would argue that the greatest asset you can acquire is rental properties. However, not all rental properties is the right asset. A friend of mine once said, you can go broke buying good deals, and he's right. Just because something seems like a good deal doesn't mean you should buy it. The right property must fit with your plan, your budget, and your ability to manage. Throughout this book, I'll share numerous tips on how to find and acquire the perfect asset to fit your plan. But for now, let's address key to success number 5, managing the right metrics. Number 5, manage the right metrics. All the steps up until this point are for nothing if you can't manage the asset that you've purchased. Rental properties are different from most other asset classes because they must be continually maintained and managed. Unlike stocks, for which you can simply write a check and then ignore them for years, rental properties require continual oversight. Rental property investing is a lot like a tightrope walker trying to stay balanced on a wire hundreds of feet above the crowded city intersection. One small slip and all could be lost. The tightrope walker's primary job is to move forward while not falling off to the left or right. He simply needs to maintain his balance until he can get to the other side. When a gust of wind comes from the left, he leans to the right. When his foot begins to slip, his other foot keeps him steady. When dealing with rentals, you'll encounter many gusts of wind that threaten to knock you off your tightrope. The way you manage will make the difference between staying on the wire or falling. I use the phrase manage the right metrics not only because it rolls off the tongue nicely, but also because it describes exactly what a good rental property owner does. A metric is generally defined as a standard for measuring or evaluating something. So with respect to real estate, a metric would be how your property is performing. What did the cash flow look like last month? What kind of increase did you see in expenses over the previous 12 months? What has appreciation done for your property in the past decade? These are metrics, and like others, they'll help you stay on the wire, balancing and counterbalancing until you reach the other side. In chapter 17 and 18 of this book, I'll specifically discuss managing the rentals you own, including both physical management, like dealing with tenants, and business management, dealing with the numbers. Both are key in finding success through rental properties. Conclusion. Have you committed yourself to being successful? Have you shifted the way your mind thinks, focusing on the how can I question rather than the limiting I can't statement? Have you committed to investing the time needed to learn everything you need to know about real estate, building your educational foundation so no one can ever knock you over? Have you committed to planning your future, setting goals and working towards those goals consistently? Have you committed to finding only the best deals that fit your plan and to doing the work necessary to make your dream a reality? Have you committed to managing your investment to the utmost detail, watching every metric so you can continue to build and grow your wealth over the coming years? I hope you have. Now, I want to actually show you a few real-life sample plans that you can adopt for your own future. But be careful, though. The next chapter might just change your life forever. Chapter 3, Four Sample Plans. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry once said, "A goal without a plan is just a wish." Now that you know where you want to go, having a plan for how to get there is important. So this chapter is all about developing a roadmap for your rental property future. After all, you would not pile the family in the car, back out of the driveway, and then drive across the country to visit Disneyland without a GPS or a roadmap. Sure, you might make it all the way to your destination, but along the way you'll hit numerous roadblocks and dead ends, make countless wrong turns, backtrack when you get lost, and arrive late with a vehicle full of grumpy kids. The same is true for your investing future. By knowing the general direction you want to go, you'll probably more or less reach your destination, but it'll likely take you much longer than anticipated and cause you a lot more stress in the process. Your goal should be to arrive at your destination with as little hassle and as much speed as possible. Your plan will be the catalyst to help you do that. In this chapter, I'll discuss several different plans that people use to achieve their goals through rental properties. My goal with this chapter is twofold. One, to show you there are multiple ways of reaching your destination, and two, to inspire you to create your own plan. Unlike most real estate gurus, I'm not going to tell you that there is only one right way to invest in real estate. I will not say this is a path that will work for you, and you may not like this. Maybe you want a simple answer that you can just go do. However, the truth is there is no one right way, though there's probably a right way for you. I hope that by the end of this chapter, you are ready to build your own roadmap and find that way. Plan number one, how to make $1 million through rental properties. The plan I'm about to describe is very similar to the one I'm taking in my own life. The idea is simple. Buy incredible rental properties, save the cash flow, and reinvest that cash flow into even more properties. This is not a get-rich-quick plan. It plays out over 7 to 10 years, maybe more, maybe less. The timeline is not as important, nor are the specific numbers. What matters is the underlying math. And I hope that after reading about this plan, you will better understand the kind of plan you will want to build for yourself. Before I get to the plan for making $1 million in net worth, let me clarify a few things. First, this is not the only way to make money in real estate, just one path that I like. This is not a guaranteed plan. This is an if-then plan. If A, then B, then if B, then C. Everything depends on those ifs. Third, this plan is presented with ideal numbers. For example, I use a nice round 3% appreciation number because that has been the U.S. historical average. However, real life is not going to be exactly 3% for appreciation each year. Some years might be 1, some might be 5, others might be -4. Again, these are average ideals. Fourth, the specific price per unit does not matter as much as the mathematical concepts I'm about to talk about. For example, if I say, buy a $100,000 house, half the readers of this book will think, I can never find a house that cheap. While the other half thinks, I would never pay that much for a house. Because real estate is relative to location, and that's okay. The mathematical concepts are what matters far more than the specifics. You might find properties with values that are lower or higher, depending on your location. And lastly, this is not legal advice. I'm not even telling you this is the path you should definitely take. Again, it's just one plan that has worked. Setting your buying standards. The vast majority of properties out there are terrible investments and would end up costing you more than you'd make. Instead, you must adhere to certain standards for this plan to work. The following is an example of such standards. First, multifamily property. In this plan, we'll be buying fourplexes and 24-unit apartments. Cash flow of $200 per unit per month after all expenses have been paid, including vacancy, maintenance, utilities, management, CapEx, taxes, insurance, plus any other expenses the property might have. If that confused you at all, don't worry. We'll cover all that throughout this book. Next, the property must be purchasable for a discount because you are great at finding deals in this market. For this sample plan, we'll be buying every property at 80% of what it's normally worth. For example, the average buyer would pay $100,000 and we'll pay $80,000. Next, the property's value must be capable of being improved by 10% during the first year through forced appreciation, such as a new paint job or landscaping or additional rehab work. Next, the property was going to appreciate at 3% per year after year one. So again, year one is that 10% increase, and after that, it'll go 3% per year. Now, you might be tempted to say that these standards are impossible to fulfill, but trust me, they are not. Bigger Pockets is full of examples of investors who are following these very standards and succeeding. Perhaps the area you live in is different, but these locations do exist. I own properties just like this. However, you will have to think differently. For example, ask most average Americans whether buying a property for 80% of its value is possible, and they'll say no. Ask an experienced house flipper, and he or she will say, yes, but that's paying way too much. You see, a house flipper or a real estate wholesaler typically has to purchase a property far less than 80% of the value for their plan to work. So it all comes down to mindset. Are you someone who says it can't be done, or somebody who asks, how can it be done? Buying the first property. Using these standards, we find a fourplex that needs a little help. Perhaps it's a bank repo that smells like 100 cats, or a for sale by owner property of a retired couple that is just looking for some cash flow. I'm not talking about a disaster, just a place that needs some cosmetic assistance. The property is listed at $100,000, but we are able to buy it for 80% of that, or $80,000. For simplicity's sake, we'll say that the seller will pay our closing costs, which means we are required to put down $16,000 for a 20% down payment. In addition, we'll spend $4,000 on minor repairs and improvements to satisfy the standard of a 10% appreciation during the first year. So, year one. Here is a summary of our portfolio after year one. Our loan is for approximately $63,500. At the end of the year one, our value is at $110,000 because it was worth $100,000 and we had a 10% appreciation during year one. Our cash flow that we've saved up is $10,000. Okay, technically it's $9,600, but I like easy math, so we're going to round up. Our total equity at that point is $46,500. Our total net worth at that point is $56,500, adding the equity and the cash flow together. Now, I just want to quickly remind you that this kind of property doesn't exist on every street corner. Is finding these properties difficult? Yes. Is finding these properties hard if you only need to find one property every couple of years across the entire United States? Well, I think it's totally possible. Well, it's definitely not impossible. Year two. Nothing changes during year two. During this year, you simply manage your property incredibly effectively. Cut your expenses as much as possible. Raise the rent as much as possible. Run a well-oiled machine. By the end of year two, our portfolio looks like this. Our loan is for $63,000 approximately. Our value is now at $113,300 because of the 3% appreciation. Our total cash flow saved is $20,000. Our total equity is $50,300. And our total net worth is now $70,300. Year three. At the start of year three, we will buy our second fourplex using the $20,000 we have saved from the cash flow. That's right. We're not actually going to put any more of our hard-earned cash into this plan. We're just going to use recycled cash flow. The next property will be exactly like our first, identical, with the same numbers, same price, and same cash flow. Remember, this is an ideal scenario just to represent how this works in the real world. Maybe you'll find fiveplexes or a triplex or four separate houses. The underlying math is what is important here. Now, we have now two income streams going. We have fourplex A and fourplex B. For the sake of time here, let's look at our combined figures for the end of year three. At the end of year three, we now have combined loans are $126,000. Our combined value is $227,000. Our annual combined cash flow that we've saved is $20,000, $10,000 from each of the two fourplexes. Our total equity at that point is $101,000. Our net worth, $121,000. Year four. At the end of year four, we will simply rinse and repeat once again. You guessed it, another fourplex, same numbers. We now have three income streams going, fourplex A, fourplex B, and fourplex C. The total for the end of year four are as follows. Our combined loans are $177,000. Our combined value is $350,500. Our combined cash flow saved is $30,000, $10,000 from each property. Our total equity at that point is $173,500. And our total net worth is $203,500. At the end of year four and the beginning of year five, we're going to make our first trade up. If you're familiar with the board game Monopoly, you'll recognize a strategy. In Monopoly terms, we're essentially going to be trading our houses for hotels. In this example, however, we're going to trade our three fourplexes for one apartment building. As you saw at the end of year four, we have accumulated approximately $203,500 in equity. But we can't use all of this cash. The trade-up has certain costs associated with it, like realtor fees and closing costs that need to be covered. We will use a 1031 tax exchange to defer taxes to a later date, and I'll explain how that all works and the power of the 1031 exchange in Chapter 19, so don't worry about that now. But we will still need to pay closing costs and for an agent to sell the property. So after all expenses have been paid out, we will have approximately $175,000 remaining in cash to invest in our next property. As you can probably guess, we are going to use this money as a 20% down payment on our next investment, allowing us to pay up to $875,000 for the property, because $175,000 is about 20% of $875,000. Now, we will buy our new property using these same standards as for our first three properties. Just a quick reminder, those were, we're going to buy a multifamily, the cash flow of $200 per unit per month after all the expenses have been paid. We want to purchase the property for 80% of its value. The property must be capable of being improved by 10% during the first year through forced depreciation. And the property must appreciate at 3% per year after year one. Now, after some careful searching, we find an apartment building worth $1 million, but we're able to buy it for $800,000 because of our 20% discount we're getting on all of our properties we're shopping for. Our 20% down payment of $160,000 makes the loan amount $640,000, and it leaves us with approximately $13,000 for closing costs, reserves, and repairs. At the end of year five, our portfolio looks like this. Our loan is for $625,000. Our value is now at $1.1 million because it appreciated 10% during that first year. Our cash flow saved now is $57,600 because roughly 24 units times $200 per unit times 12 months is $57,600. Our total equity is $475,000, making our total net worth $532,600. Now in year six, no changes or purchases are made. We just relax and collect the cash flow, saving every penny for our next trade up. Again, this is a time to manage effectively and to save cash. At the end of year six, our portfolio now looks like this. Our loan is $610,000, approximately. Our value of the property is $1.133 million due to the 3% increase that year. Our cash flow saved is $115,200. After all, 24 units times $200 times 24 months now of savings is $115,200. Our total equity at that point is $523,000. Our total net worth is $638,200. Year seven. Year seven is another year of rest, if you can call it that. We simply manage effectively and we save all the cash we can. At the end of year seven, our portfolio now looks like this. Our loan is $595,000 approximately. Our value is $1.167 million. due to the 3% growth over the previous year. Our cash flow saved is now $172,800, which was 24 units at $200 a piece times 36 months. Our total equity in the property is $572,000. Our total net worth at this point is $744,800, including the cash flow saved. Now, perhaps you want to simply live off the cash flow from this point on. This scenario is generating a respectable $57,000 in passive income each year, which is approximately what the average American household earns. However, the total net worth is only $750,000. One final trade-up would be needed to reach the final million-dollar figure. Perhaps this could happen right away, during year 7, or perhaps not for several years. The key is to work with the market and learn to ride it like a wave. For example purposes, let's sell now and trade up. Year 7, start of year 8. We take all the equity and cash we have, approximately $744,800, and we subtract the sales expenses, we'll say roughly $94,800, to give us a nice round profit of $650,000 to use for our final down payment. Our final purchase will be a 75-unit apartment complex listed for sale at $3.4 million. But we are able to purchase it for just $2.75 million because the 20% off rule still applies. We'll use a down payment of $650,000, making the seller pay closing costs, for a total mortgage amount of $2.1 million. At this final stage of our million-dollar journey, the end of year 7 and the start of year 8, our portfolio looks like this. Our loan is for $2.1 million. The value of the property is $3.4 million. Our cash flow saved is $0 because we just bought the property, but it'll be approximately $15,000 per month in passive income going forward. Our total equity, $1.3 million. So our total net worth, $1.3 million. We did it, $1 million, or 1.3 actually, with only 5 purchases in 7 or maybe 8 full years of investing. Now, is this possible? Remember, this is an ideal situation with nice round numbers. Many people have moved much faster, while others have moved much slower in their investing journey. The purpose of this exercise was simply to give you a big picture idea of how the approach works and to provide a good illustration of what I call trading up. This journey could take 10 years, it could take 20 years, it could take 5 years. It depends on a number of factors, many of which are outside your control, like inflation, the market, the economy. However, this represents a possible roadmap. If this were your roadmap, it would be much easier to stay on track and avoid the shiny object syndrome so many of us face. This plan sets standards that, if obtained, would give us the outcome we desire. Now, let's look at the second plan in this chapter, which focuses not on multifamily, but on single-family homes. Plan number 2, building wealth through single-family homes. In this plan, we'll look at the concept of building wealth through the purchase and holding of single-family homes. While in the previous example, we started with a goal of achieving $1 million in net worth, this time, our goal is to make an extra $5,000 per month in cash flow from rental properties. This might be perfect for someone looking to quit their job, supplement their retirement, or just create more passive income from which to travel more and to live a more luxurious life. So without further suspense, let's get to the plan. For this plan, let's pretend we are currently making $60,000 a year after taxes from our day job, which works out to about $5,000 per month. We have $10,000 in savings and have flipped the switch in our head that says, yes, I'm going to do what it takes. Therefore, the first part of the plan will be to set aside 20% of our income for investment purposes. Yes, cutting 20% of our life is not always easy, but sacrifice is often needed. As a result, we are going to live on only $48,000 per year, and we're going to put $12,000 per year toward our investments. Year 1. During year 1, we are simply going to save money and learn. We read a lot of real estate books, ask a lot of questions, hang out in the Bigger Pockets forums for a few minutes every day, listen to podcasts on our daily commute, and simply grow our knowledge base. We'll also save $1,000 per month from our job. So at the end of year 1, we will have $12,000 saved, plus the $10,000 we started with, giving us $22,000 with which to begin our journey at the start of year 2. For those who say that $1,000 per month is impossible to save, perhaps consider finding a way to earn an extra $1,000 a month instead. The same principle applies. Year 2. The first property we will purchase is a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 1970s home located in a blue-collar neighborhood. The home is a bank foreclosure listed at $100,000. However, because of a smoke smell permeating the home, the property has been sitting on the market for several months. We come along and after doing